joyous day. Welcome back to Anti-Media Radio. We're here in hour two. It's 8 p.m. on the West Coast. And what another week for the mainstream news. Man, did they made a buck and a half this week. I mean, they are doing quite well for themselves. And once again, the reason is because another news cycle dominated by who else but Donald Trump. This is becoming a thing now where you can tell it's going to be a big week if something early on in the week happens that has to do with Donald Trump and Russia. This elusive connection between Donald Trump and Russia. And now look, let me reiterate for the millionth time, I didn't support any of them. I didn't support either Trump or Clinton. So I'm free to cast aspersions in every which direction. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. And I'm going to play devil's advocate. Because the devil's a pretty good guy. Devil's pretty cool. Sometimes. When he's not being an a-hole. But let's talk the devil here. Let's play a little devil's advocate. So, a few months ago, the liberal establishment despised beyond all words one man. Well, several men, actually. But particularly for the point of this argument, one man. His name was Jimmy Comey. FBI Director James Comey was enemy number one among the liberal establishment because he turned the election. And I actually do think he did turn the election when he announced on October 28, 2016, that the investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails was not over. The investigation was open. I felt it. I remember the exact moment I heard the announcement on the public radio station I was listening to. And I said to myself at that exact moment, this could turn the election. And sure enough, it did. Okay. So, you know, and I understand centrist Democrats were very upset about that. I understand why they would be. But along with that has come, oh my goodness. Goodness, oh my, is it true? Oh, is it true? Do we really have DB calling into the show? Is this a miracle? Do we that was like a ghost. That was like a ghost of DB that just called into the show. Oh, maybe that was Claire. We're going to be joined by Claire. But that was weird. I swear to God, the ghost of DB is here, even though DB is in Rome right now. We're going to be joined in a minute by journalist Claire Bernish, who's going to help me break this down. But first, let me finish my little diatribe here. The liberal establishment hated James Comey because he turned the election. And they wanted blood, and they want to draw this connection between Trump and Russia, because a couple of intelligence agencies have said, yeah, maybe. That's their evidence, basically, right now. That's the evidence connecting Trump to Russia. Oh, well, a couple of intelligence agencies said, yeah, maybe. You know, hey, let's cut his legs off and throw him in prison. Let's break Trump's kneecaps and put him in prison for the rest of his life. Even though, with a little bit of perspective, we can see that at best, if you proved that, and I guess the contention here is that Russia facilitated the release of some of these WikiLeaks documents and or actually provided some of the information, worked with WikiLeaks, it has to be some kind of connection there. But at best, they released some information, some hacked, leaked information to WikiLeaks. Okay, sorry to break it to you, but our own CIA has done a million times worse in 100 other countries Not actually 100, but like over 30 countries we've done wars, and we're going to get into that. But you know, so this you know, payback is a bitch. It sucks. The irony is thick with this one. But even worse here is this hypocrisy over we hated Comey, but now all of a sudden we have an in, we have an avenue toward critiquing Trump for another week. Let's jump on the James Comey bandwagon, and it's driving me crazy. It's driving me nuts. I'm so sick of this selected outrage and just this, you know, mainstream media bullshit over who's the enemy of the week. Well, guess what? It's Trump again. But here's the reason this week. And we have Rachel Maddow's eyeball popping out of her head to tell you and show you it to you. I'm gonna bring in Claire Burnish now because I need someone. I'm too wrapped up in my kind of neoliberal background because most of my friends were centrist Democrats. I need a good, just strong anarchist to come in and give me some grounding in reality, if that's not a little bit of a paradox there, an anarchist giving you some reality. But Claire, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing wonderfully well. How are you?
I'm good. Did you like my weird slight right before introducing you?
I'm not really sure what to make of that. Thanks a lot.
Oh, well, you know, come on, you know how it is. I mean, just like an anarchist society is hard to imagine. I mean, that's not, it's, no, it's easy to imagine. It's hard to really break down into the nitty-gritty of it. However, I'm trying and I'm challenging myself. Most people don't do this. I'm challenging myself. I'm reading A Spontaneous Order, which is an anarcho-capitalist book. And I'm challenging myself to take on different perspectives, mainly for the goal of satirizing it in science fiction. However, you have a very, very unique perspective on the world. You're a flawless journalist, so I always love having you on the show. And in this particular case, you're going to help me guest host because our beloved DB is in Rome. And I wanted to have you on the show, and I was very happy that you came on. And what is your take on exactly what's going on this week with the James Comey thing? Do you have a hot take on it?
I'm not sure that I would say that. I really think all of this is distraction and among other things. I mean, we're talking about this is the head of the FBI. This is so frustrating for me because there's so much going on elsewhere. This seems like a diversionary tactic from a diversionary tactic already. The
And
whole Russia thing.
we're going to get into it. And that's why I had you on the show. It's because if you go anywhere else, like, you know, my mom is, you know, really into alt media. I got her into alt media. She's a huge fan of yours, by the way. And then even she messaged me earlier today, emailed me and said, "Oh my God, I've been watching MSNBC for 2 hours. I'm like obsessed with it. I can't stop watching the James Comey stuff." I'm like, "Mom, you're better than this." And that's what everyone's doing. My entire Facebook feed is people going, "James Comey, I bleed for you, James Comey. I heart James Comey." I mean,
It's all
I
crap.
think James Comey is in prison right now. This is the same guy they wanted to cut his head off 3 months ago.
Yeah, this is all crap. It's all crap. I mean, like, there's some validity in wanting to investigate somebody who might have had, you know,
Sure.
suspicious ties or something. I mean, I can see that to an extent, but this is all diversion from all of the other things going on, specifically the curtailment of rights on the domestic front and the fact that we are still rushing headlong into war on one of multiple fronts. You know, it just, yes, it's a big deal. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that it's something everybody should ignore, but what I'm saying is keep your eyes open. Whenever the press, the mainstream media, the corporate
Right.
media, like begins to just kind of zero in on one single thing, and that's pretty much all they do, you can be, it's a guarantee that there is something else going on that is not being seen, that is of like absolute crucial importance.
Right. And
So
especially when it's bipartisan, you know that an especially larger than life lie is going on. And my thing and you know, my issue with this usurping the elections or meddling with the elections is how unbelievably hypocritical it is. Our CIA has meddled in so many elections. I mean, you can go back through the decades, whether a liberal president is office or whether a Republican president is office. In Guatemala, Congo, Dominican Republic, South Vietnam, Brazil, Uruguay, Bolivia, Chile,
Russia, Russia. Russia is the biggest one.
Russia, the biggest one. Right.
We had direct interference in the Russian election, and for the U.S. to say, hey, Russia interfered in our election is, like, ridiculous because the evidence is very thin, whereas when the U.S. meddled in the Russian election, it was very obvious to almost everybody involved almost immediately afterwards, and then it came out that we had, in fact, meddled there. So there's a lot of hypocrisy going on right now, and that also needs to be, you know, kind of emphasized.
Right, but the mainstream news, they won't even point that out, not once. An honest news outlet. Now, I'll admit, Democracy Now! Does this from time to time. But in any honest news outlet, in a discussion about meddling in elections, would point out our role in meddling in other foreign countries' elections. It's intellectually dishonest at best to not point that out.
I agree. It's completely disingenuous. I mean, it's like, we're pointing out everything. The U.S. government is pointing out everything that everybody else has done wrong while ignoring that they have done the exact same thing countless times all over the planet, and everybody knows it. And that's what has made, more than anything else, that is what has made this government a laughingstock of the world.
Right. And bear in mind, they haven't presented a shred of evidence of this so-called collusion.
No, and the thing is, we're talking about unassailable proof that the U.S. has done this elsewhere and admitted as much.
Right.
It's hypocrisy of the highest order, and that's again a sign that we need to be focused elsewhere.
Right. So let's go into that. What are some of the I follow your Facebook feed and consider it a news source, and a general news source, and I keep up with your articles and whatnot. And, so what do you think, there's a couple things we had talked about, wanting to talk about. I want to talk about protest bills and what I see as essentially, the government, realizing that more and more people are disgruntled. And so we have to crack down against their protesting because we can't have millions of people marching through the streets. So let's let alt-right people mow them down in their cars. That's one of the issues. Am I right?
Yeah, that is one of the issues. And this is really a disappointing subject of debate in the anarchist community because, frankly, yes, we understand that people blocking highways and blocking streets is probably not the best way to get your point across. Yet at the same time, if you're blocking highways and streets, it's because your community is not being heard. Your particular, whatever your grievance is, has not been heard. And the idea is that you want everybody to be as uncomfortable as you are in,
right,
knowing your issue. Now, that said, I don't actually have a major stance on this because I don't believe that marching on a highway is going to get your point across. However, bills to mow protesters down and not be held accountable, which is essentially what they are. There's bills in other states that are, they're talking about finding activists found to be working on the part of a group in such an action. They can be fined up to $1 million and charged with like several felonies and of the highest order. I mean, these are ridiculous. Let's make no bones about it. The anarchist community is debating the fact that people say that they can now run over protesters. Well, what this really is about is the curtailment of rights and the curtailment of free speech and the redress of grievances. If we are mowing people down, if we're debating like if that's right or wrong that people block traffic, we're ignoring the fact that what the government is trying to do is quash dissent altogether. It's completely ignoring the issue, and it's infuriating that it has devolved into this conversation.
Can I take a wild guess at the anarchist community that is most in support of these bills? No, I'm not even going to say it. I don't want to be divisive.
Yeah, it would be better that you don't say it. I think we both know what you're talking about. And I don't. And I would like to also emphasize that it's not as if that sect of the anarchist community is saying, run people down. It's not as if most of them are saying that.
Right.
Actually, the people who are saying, well, the bill is understandable, are people who are saying, you are impeding somebody's forward progress and their chance to make a living. And what if they are desperate for the job and get, fired or something like that? Those are valid arguments. Let's not, beat around the bush. It's a valid argument. Mowing protesters down with your car, however, is not an answer to that.
Let's just make sure that these same people making that argument support the rights of the worker in other ways. Oh, wait. No, that's doesn't happen a lot.
Let's not get into that debate.
Okay,
that's the thing you want to get into. And that's kind of my point, is that it is very easy to get into that that particular
I
facet
know.
of his
I don't
debate.
want to go there. And one of the things I respect so much about you is that you're a hardcore anarchist, but you'll still come down to my level and my level by meaning that I'm still kind of fascinated by the left-right binary, even though
Well,
I
and
am a
yeah.
recovering Democrat and I've made that point many times.
So am
But
I. So am I. I mean, not exactly, but my family was all Democrats and actually held office. So, I mean, I see that perspective. Yes, but like my dad worked in commerce,
I didn't.
under Carter.
Wow.
Yeah, politics at the dinner table was something that happened for me from the time I was 5 years old. So yes, believe me,
Nice.
I know the different perspectives. That said, we're talking very seriously now about the quashing of not only the press, but also of speech and of expression. And when you're talking about protests, we cannot let this devolve into something like, well, you think it's okay to block traffic and you don't. It's not like that at all. And this is the trick of propaganda. Propaganda will divide and conquer. And look at what
Right.
it's doing to anarchists who, like, already are dividing and conquering among themselves anyway. It's made that split even worse. And it makes the split in the populace even worse, too, because they see the fractures among activists and they're like, well, see, they can't even agree on it. So why should we get behind this bill or stand opposed to this bill or, you know, things like that? This is a very, very important critical issue. If we are being corralled into free speech zones and the press is being corralled into the safe press zone when something happens, we're looking at a fascist state. Because that's the government controlling the narrative. That's not the people controlling the government. And obviously, we're not the people controlling the government any longer, but every step towards less of that is a problem. Fining a protester up to $1 million just because they happen to be part of a group that opposes something
Yeah,
is a very huge problem. That is not
that's
acceptable.
fascistic. I mean, that's absurd, you know. That's
Yeah, and that's what we should be debating. We should not be debating like who believes what and who believes that. I think that we can come to a general consensus that killing people who want to, you know, express their problems is not a good idea. Like, I think everybody can agree on that. I think that
absolutely.
everybody also can agree on the fact that, you know, although we are in a state, we're in a nation state, we're not in an anarchist, you know, conglomeration of things. We don't have a choice right now. So these curtailments of rights are not acceptable. That it worries me a great deal how much people have divided on this.
Yeah, it's troubling, and it's you know I you know even I had Derek Bros on the show last week, and he didn't talk specifically about this, but he's I frequently talking about how the divide and conquer politics have really gestated into the anarchist community, and to a certain extent into the libertarian community. And it's this is what they do. This is the government's their if we can say the government is good at anything. And there's not many things they are good at. They're good at economic imperialism, and they're good at obstructing truth, and they're good at sowing division among various groups, population groups. They're very good at that. And we're seeing one of the greatest examples in recent history right now in how they're using the Trump puppet show to further segment, radical communities.
It's two tactics in one. The propaganda, right? Well, actually, it's many, but the two main tactics in the propaganda that's going on right now are we have divide and conquer, and divide and conquer is being used in a number of ways. I mean, we're talking about, we were just discussing the anarchist community. We're also talking about along race lines, we're talking about along class lines and everything else. The divide and conquer is very strong, but we're also being divided. In terms of, oh wow, I think I lost my train of thought.
It's all right, you'll
but
think
it's
about that.
not just divide and conquer. It's more than that. We're being deflected from the issues by the Trump puppet show, by the Comey puppet show, by the Hillary Clinton puppet show. We're being deflected from the fact that we are all losing rights. We're debating and arguing amongst ourselves about the rights that are going away. And we're ignoring the fact that they're being erased. And that's where this is so effective. It's the same thing with like the fake news crap that they put out earlier. You could see it from a mile away. The first time the term fake news hit the airwaves, I said to myself, that is going to be a problem.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it is a problem. And we see how it went. Mainstream media played out the idea of fake news to its hilt, to the point where it backfired on them, or at least it had the appearance of backfiring on them. So then they can turn around all of mainstream. If you look at the headlines at a certain point, said, you know what? Fake news, that's a tired idea. Let's get rid of that. And they all at once said, no longer are we going to say fake news. And then it shifts again. So now people are still throwing around the term fake news. But what has happened is that there has been ensuing confusion among the populace. Nobody knows what to believe because everybody thinks everything is fake. It doesn't matter if, and I had an article where I connected to a document that literally was the environmental assessment for the Dakota Access Pipeline, literally the assessment from the company and from the Army Corps of Engineers. And I shared that with somebody in my article, and they said, this is fake news. And I said, okay, I'm sorry, would you like to approach the Army Corps of Engineers and tell them that? Because I'm sure that they might have a problem. I mean, it's that bad. And that's a very effective tool of propaganda as well. And that's another divisive thing, because then you have people who aren't used to alternative and independent media saying, you all are fake news, where we're sitting here saying, we have the government documents and even the mainstream links, if you really want them, please follow them and see that it's not fake news, and nobody buys anything.
I find that to be a continual problem for me, is deciding which links I'm going to use to back myself up. Should I use the mainstream media links, which I don't like, which I think are fake news, or should I use the alt media links, which they think are the fake news? What do you want from me? Facts are facts. We know what's going on. The fake news propaganda meme was basically it's the conspiracy theory meme of the 60s. This is the same thing they did with the word conspiracy theory back in the 60s. And it works very well, and they needed a new one. And I'm with you. The first week that came out, I said, this is effed. This is going to be really bad. And it's since metastasized into Google and Facebook actually censoring their algorithm, providing you plugins. I'm sure you know more about this in terms of what they're actually doing. It's very, very fascistic and effed up.
Well, part of the problem with that is, you know, they set up this whole fake news thing, and then we now have people who think it's perfectly acceptable for censorship to happen. And not only for censorship to happen, but censorship to happen from a select group of organizations, namely being, you know, the New York Times, CNN, Snopes of all things, which I can't tell you how many times we've Snopes in the alternative media. I mean, this is yet again a very big problem. And you have, you know, the better part of the American populace saying, hey, that's fine. You know, these people are saying that this is trusted. And since we know the name, the New York Times, then we should trust them. Not even thinking back to the fact that the Iraq War started in part because of, I can't remember her name. An article that they did, you know, basically saying that there were chemical weapons and weapons of mass destruction were on the way and all this stuff. And it was completely fake. And that started the Iraq War that still hasn't ended. Mainstream media acts as the government's mouthpiece, and it also acts as the way that the intelligence can shift the narrative. And we know that this happens. We had Operation Mockingbird, which essentially never ended and has morphed now into this Ministry of Truth provision in the 2017 NDAA.
Yes, so we have that.
Yeah, like, we can't, and we absolutely cannot forget about that. In 2013, when Jeff Bezos, who, you know, owns Amazon, when he bought the Washington Post, and the same year that he did that, he had made a deal with the CIA for a completely different project. He was awarded a $600 million contract with the CIA for an ostensibly different project. Now, if you look at what the Washington Post puts out and how many literal fake news articles they put out and how few retractions they actually issue for those articles, you will see that when the 2017 NDAA went into effect, the Washington Post, within a week of that, put out an article saying, we're hiring 60 new journalists. Now, I'm sorry. I understand that people believe that correlation is not causation and that those things don't necessarily mean one and the other, but yes, they do. I mean, let's be frank.
Well, I mean, it's like, even if it, you know, even if that particular, you know, hiring didn't have to do with it, I mean, it's pretty clear that they are ramping up a fake news division. That's what this was a provision in the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, which it's very common for them to slip in these new provisions that are very fascistic. And the ministry.
That's where indefinite detention for American citizens came in too, in the 2012 NDAA.
Right, right. And so, you know, anyone who doesn't know exactly what we're talking about right now, just look up NDAA Ministry of Truth, and you'll understand exactly. Well, not exactly, but you'll get where we're coming from. As journalists, it's very frustrating because it's become abundantly clear. The government knows exactly what we're doing. They've understood the threat of alternative media, aka truth, and they're actively looking to subvert the mechanism by which we disseminate it through the internet. And it's very, very disturbing.
It's the quashing of dissent. I will just read you one part of the text from the NDAA Ministry of Truth, essentially part. It says that they are setting up what are these called? Global engagement centers.
Right.
Now, they say that the focus of this is supposed to be countering foreign propaganda on foreign shores. That's not actually the case. If you look at the entire text of that portion, you can tell that it's also aimed at this country. And what part of it says is those centers will support the development and dissemination of fact-based narratives and analysis to counter propaganda and disinformation directed at the United States and the United States allies and its partner nations. If you think about what that means, anything, any quote-unquote propaganda or disinformation coming at the United States means anything tearing apart the establishment's narrative. Anything that is painting the U.S. in a negative light can be considered foreign propaganda. When we're talking about the fake news narrative that came around, when it first came out, they painted at least 200 alternative and independent outlets and right-leaning outlets as Russian propaganda. So if you have this in this bill to counter propaganda, then conveniently all of alternative media is suddenly foreign entities and therefore subject to being countered with this intelligence program.
And if there's anything Americans need, it's fact-based narratives from a global engagement center. You know, I think everyone wakes up every day saying, God, I wish I had more fact-based narratives from a global engagement center. But, I mean,
fact-based. I mean, that's...
Yeah. No, and they're defining facts, and it's, you know, look, this is troubling now, but it's going to get a lot more troubling when we have our next big terrorism attack. And I don't know when it's going to be. Who does? Of course, I don't know when it's going to be. But when it gets to the point where they're starting to make active ties between journalists who write articles that are not in lockstep with the fact-based narrative and making that a connection between fostering and aiding terrorists.
They have.
Right, but when it actually...
You think about it... Okay, I'm sorry, I have to say this.
No,
when you
ahead.
Think about it, when this all of this came out, when this fake news thing and all the alternative media was our Russian propagandists, RT, which granted is a state-run media organization, and Abby Martin as an independent journalist were called out specifically as being agents of a foreign state. Now, we know that that's not true. Like, Russia Today it's a government-tied organization, and we know that there's going to be Russian propaganda coming out of that organization. We know that. That's fine. But that doesn't make every single thing that they put out fake news, particularly when they can cite it and show the documents, et cetera, et cetera. Abby Martin is not a Russian agent. Oh. She's an independent journalist, and she has, you know, her own opinions, and she does analyses. But she's also critical of the U.S. government, like many of us are. And that was the beginning. That was the first sign that that's exactly what's going to be coming for the rest of us when they get the chance.
And when they have a chance, I mean, I don't know if it'll get to the point where they're locking people up, but hell, it very well could. And I don't think it's alarmist. I don't think it's paranoid to say when you have a consensus reality that there's fake news out there, all it takes now is one trigger and they can start actually locking people up. If you're spreading news that helps terrorists, that's the next phase. I've been arguing this for a long time. Recreating the narrative of the internet, I think, is going to be the next phase of the deep state, because they've realized how successful we've been in getting truth to people. So now you can't change the facts that are out there. You can't change the voices that are out there. What you can do is you can create a new narrative that keeps people scared of it. And that's why Trump beating Clinton in this election was one of the worst things that could happen for, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, it's one of the worst things that could have happened for, in a way for free speech, because what you have now is you have an entire block of centrist Democrats who will not listen to alternative media now because they think it cost Clinton the election.
I don't think that it would have been any different had she won. I honestly don't. I think that these are the controls that would have been coming down no matter what. It would have just taken a slightly different form. And for the quashing of journalists too, you have to remember that police, at the behest of their overseers in the government, have started crushing freedom of the press on the spot. When people cover things on scene, the police don't just come after the activists or the people protesting or even the rioters. They come after the press as well. When I was covering the inauguration protests, I was in a herd of journalists standing on the sidewalk watching a police line move in on some protesters. And out of the blue, the police just moved on this group of journalists. That's all we were. There's a guy with a $100,000 video camera in front of me. He got pushed on the ground and we all had to pick him up, and the police were still coming at us. That's the press. When the police start to corral the press, not let them see what's going on, and actually physically attack them and arrest them like they did in Standing Rock at the inauguration and everything since then, we have a problem. I don't mean to be so dynamic, but we have had so many deflections of what is really going on in, you know, this whole dog and pony show with Comey and with all of these other issues that occasionally hit the headlines. Do those things really matter? Like, we really need to be paying attention to the First Amendment and where it has vanished in this country. And we also need to be paying attention to what we're doing overseas, which gets completely shrouded by this basically rumor mill that has developed over politics. We're in a very dangerous and precarious situation. And I think that people need to be paying a lot closer attention to things.
I could not agree with you more. Literally, if I tried. I am so disturbed by this. And, you know, I'm really glad you brought up the Ministry of Truth thing, because I hadn't thought about that in a while. And I'm actually doing another list of conspiracy theories that turned out to be true. And one of them is that, I don't know how I'm going to word it yet, but basically that the media is a branch of the State Department. And, thinking, do I really have the facts to make this case? I'm trying to keep the conspiracies limited to ones that are irrefutably proven, you know? And so I'm like, is this one irrefutably proven? And I'm like,
yes,
I think it pretty much is. And
it literally is. It's called the Countering Disinformation Act.
Right.
And if you read the text as an intelligent human being, all you have to do is switch a couple adjectives, and it is very much the truth, which is terrifying.
And of course, not to mention the collusion between the DNC and the media we saw during the primaries. And if regardless of whether you care about the Democratic Party or not, that was a very illuminating chapter in history to see those WikiLeaks cables come out and show just how exactly that operation went down. It's all right. So we've got that down. You referenced some of the overseas things going on, and I want to get into that, because I get a little, bogged down sometimes on some of these geopolitical situations are so complex that I find myself just getting confused. And right now we have this endless quagmire in Syria. We have this, eternal chess match going on between the U.S. and Russia and China, and now, and of course, not now, but North Korea and whatnot. What do you, and before this Comey thing came out, that was basically, that dominated the news cycle for about 2 weeks, a rigmarole over how big of a threat North Korea is. And of course, I'm one of the people that believes, you know what, why don't we just leave North Korea the hell alone? I mean, are you with me there? What do you think of this ramped up Cold War against North Korea right now?
Yeah, if you actually look at what is going on in the foreign theaters, like the active with Syria, the South China Sea, North Korea, if you look at what's actually happening, it's the U.S. acting aggressively using the stance of preemptive defense, which I'm sorry, there is no such thing. That's just complete doublespeak. Preemptive defense is we're going to be aggressive and try to play it off and hope nobody really, notices. And honestly, I agree. As an anarchist, it's hard to get into what nations should do what thing.
Right.
I believe firmly that the U.S. should pull everybody back and just come home and, we've got enough problems here. We can stop intervening in everybody else's affairs.
Can you imagine what would happen? I mean, I honestly, it's like my dream. Like, I not world peace. That's not going to happen anytime soon. But if the United States Empire just stopped with these proxy wars and constantly usurping other people's elections, can you imagine what it would do? I mean, I understand we need resources and economic imperialism is the rule of the day. But can you imagine if we just stopped doing what we're doing and saw what happened?
Yeah, exactly. And if the thing is also, it should not be underemphasized, if it weren't the U.S. in control and, this empire that it is now, it would be another nation at the same. It would be somebody else. We're in that kind of cycle of empires,
True.
The Roman Empire. It's we're looking at the same thing all over again. And part of the reason that we're looking at this huge curtailment of rights at home and all of this excess propaganda. We're looking at this sort of belligerent stance everywhere in the world and the fact that we are so, this idea of American exceptionalism that we can step in because America first or whatever. It's very veiled. There are some very serious overtones that have to do with fascism on that. And all of this, these are signs of a decaying, dying empire in its final stages. If you think about somebody drowning, they are desperate at first and they get more desperate when they're about to lose it and go underwater. And that's what this empire is doing. It is about to absolutely fall apart on its face as it should. But as it does so, it's very painful for the rest of us, the rest of the planet, all of the civilians.
I think it was you posted on Facebook the other day, I think it was you saying, this is like watching the fall of the Roman Empire, except we have Wi-Fi. Wasn't that you?
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. And that really is it. Like, this is, it's fascinating because the cycles of empires are rather long for the most part. And so it takes a while to come back into a true empire that's trying to take over the world. And that's what the U.S. is doing. There are, 169, I can't remember for sure, but there's 169 something countries in the world. And the U.S. has military bases, operations, or personnel in 150 of them.
Wow.
And that's all that is at least vaguely known. As far as we know, they're everywhere. I mean, we are a parasite on this, on the global economy and everything else. This is a very strange time for us to be in, actually living in this country and to look at what's happening around the world. This country has been somewhat of a laughingstock for some time and very much a sore point because we go into these nations for the goal of pillaging their resources or plundering their oil or whatever it is that we can find that benefits us. And we do this repeatedly over and over and over again. And we say it's for humanitarian reasons. And we say these people are brutal dictators. But I have to say that a lot of these leaders, yeah, they might have been brutal for sure. But their citizens would much rather have had their countries intact and their loved ones alive than having the U.S. come in for its own goals and tear it apart and leave terrorist groups in its wake. And that's what we're trying to do essentially in Syria, because Syria is a geostrategically important nation. And we're trying to do it virtually everywhere else.
And
we did it in Afghanistan.
Before that, it was Libya and Afghanistan and Iraq.
And Afghanistan and Iraq. And in Afghanistan, the biggest thing, of course, was the opium products there. They have like 90% of the world's opium supply now. And if you look at the figures, right before the U.S. invaded, literally right before the U.S. invaded, the Taliban had come down on its, you know, religious stringent sort of rules that they had and quashed the opium poppy crop there almost completely. Like the output there had been made almost nil and was looking to be completely eradicated from that country since that time. And coincidentally, in lockstep with the opium epidemic in this country and the opiate medication, you know, addiction epidemic, their supply has exploded. Now, like I said, they're producing 90% of the world's opium supply, which includes opiate medications and everything else. Well, guess what North Korea has? North Korea has probably the second largest supply of opium poppies on the planet. Now, North Korea is a very strict fascist dictatorship, and a lot of their supply is hidden. And all that we really have as evidence coming from there is the testimony of people who have defected from that nation. Nonetheless, that is very much a truth. If we actually started a war with North Korea, that would be a very convenient byproduct that would also feed this epidemic even further. Always, you have to look at what it is that we're doing, why we're doing it. Like every single thing. Why is Comey in the news? Why are we picking a fight with Russia? Why are we picking a fight with North Korea? Why are we picking a fight with Iran? Why are we blocking off Yemen, starving its civilians, and doing this thing here? I mean, there is always a motive for everything, and it's not humanitarian, I can guarantee you, almost always.
And I'd say it's meant to distract, except at this point, I'm not even sure that it's necessary. I've seen firsthand friends of mine who were, you know, anti-war pre-Obama, who basically have taken the stance of, well, we don't know, or we don't, you know, it's you know, it could be worse, or, you know, it'd be worse if it's a complex situation. And I always hear that one about Syria. Well, it's a complex situation. So basically what I've seen is, you know, Obama basically normalized support for war in the Middle East among a huge
I think that was George W. Bush's job.
Well, he did that, except that, you know, there was a huge backlash to what he did. And you had, you know, some of the biggest protests that we had seen since the 60s when Bush did it. But when Obama came in, we basically had an entire half of the voting population. You know, I remember I pointed out on Facebook one, I won't even call him a friend, but a person I'm friends with on there was like, you know, I said, you know, why do people only care now about Syria? It's like, no, we did care, man. We weren't stoked about it, and we let him know. And I was like, okay. I mean, you weren't stoked? Well, we're gonna recalibrate geopolitical policy because you weren't stoked about it. Like, it takes a little bit, it takes a bit more than not being stoked to stop the president. Obama got a pass during his entire presidency about his transgressions in the Middle East, and he normalized. He made war okay. And he basically neutralized the anti-war movement.
He did worse than that. Like, this is what people have forgotten. He not only normalized war to the degree you're saying, because I agree with you there, he normalized the fact that we can kill human beings from a remote control plane.
Right.
And not only that, but if anybody has ever seen the leaked videotape, which every time I can't even like bring it to mind without almost crying about it, when we used from a helicopter, we had troops who basically bombed a Reuters news team. And that's just fine with this government. If the people of this country don't think that this government will do something evil and twisted to them, they are sorely mistaken. And that is the big problem here. I think that people still believe, to their own detriment, that this government will do what the people want, or that it won't do anything harmful to them. And everything in the history of this government proves otherwise, and we need to be wary. And we're in that time right now. We're looking at, you know, journalists being arrested in Standing Rock and charged with like major felonies, facing 10 years just for being there, for covering the events. That's huge.
Unbelievable.
We're looking at journalists who have American journalists who have vanished or been killed overseas for covering certain things or uncovering information. We're looking at a president who does not give a, pardon me, but shit about the press at all, and would rather make fun of the press and feed his own ego than actually caring about the right of the press to say what it needs to say and call out the government when it needs to. This is so precarious right now. I'm thinking of, particularly Standing Rock. You were talking about Democracy Now. Amy Goodman, an award-winning journalist in Democracy Now, like a rather stellar organization, albeit leftist.
Yeah.
You know, she's just there covering the events, covering the fact that this, the plight of these people who, you know, are indigenous to this land. She's covering their plight and what they're going through. And she's covering the fact that, you know, they have this private security teams attacking these people, taking the pictures, you know, being close to the what's going on, close to the action. And she was arrested and charged with something for a while before I think it was dropped or lessened. If we don't have freedom of speech and if we don't have freedom of the press, we really don't have anything. There's a damn good reason that those rights were enshrined in the Bill of Rights in the very First Amendment. And, you know, people joke about like, oh, yeah, censorship this, or, oh, yeah, this, that, or the other thing, protest this. You know, people want to divide along these lines and they want to make this issue, you know, somewhat distant from what's going on with themselves. This is the very same concept that Pastor Martin Niemöller went over in First They Came For. It's the very same idea. It might not be as obvious. It's the very same idea. If you curtail the rights of one person, you can damn well guarantee it's going to come back and bite you in the ass when you want to use that right. And people are too short-sighted and they don't see this coming.
Right. And I think, you know, we've broken down here a couple of issues. There are dozens of how the mainstream media, while they don't always directly lie, there is something called the sin of omission. And the mainstream media, that's probably one of their biggest faults, is that they are distracting people from the bigger issues. And we know we're not even getting into the kind of corporatist issues that are going on with the internal economics of the country. And right now, everything is focused on Trump. Even liberal mainstream news media, it's 100%. I think there was some study done about Rachel Maddow's show, and like something like 60% of the stories she covered during a certain amount of time were focused on not just Trump, but the Trump-Russia collusion issue, as if that was the only thing in the world that mattered. When there's this plethora of issues that are literally changing the world that generations to follow are going to live in, and you have someone like Rachel Maddow who has such an influence, who is just basically, you know, a friend of mine was saying, yeah, I like her, and I was saying, yeah, you know, she likes to get a paycheck, you know, and it's basically. What the issue is some of these big time reporters, you know, Abrams and Lawrence O'Donnell, people with who maybe at one point had a modicum of intellectual integrity, they're now just, you know, they're getting a paycheck to talk about the things that the corporate heads want them to talk about because people will eat it up and it distracts them. And it's insidious. There's no other word to use. It's insidious.
And it's on the left and right, too.
Right.
I mean,
it's
definitely a left and right thing. And part of that, I believe, from what I've observed recently, is that the supposed corporate media journalists, I want to put that in quotes, they're focusing on these topics one by one and picking them apart and dissecting them down to the molecular level for a reason. It keeps people's attentions focused on something. If they feel like they can relate because it's pounded into their skulls 24/7, then they're going to focus only on that. What they're not doing, and one of the jobs of journalists, which I think isn't really emphasized much, is that journalists should be making people think critically.
Right.
Of course, when we have an education system that's failing because all of our money is going to feed the war machine, that's not really a thing either. But you can we have more information at our fingertips than I had ever dreamed when I was, say, in sixth grade. I had no idea that I would be able to turn on a machine and find any information that I wanted. I remember doing research projects on, like I researched Three Mile Island from a card catalog, and I found testimony from one of the operators there who said that there was a meltdown. And I can't find that online now. You know, I mean, I'm just saying, people have forgotten how to look at an issue and think, what does the other side think? Why would they think that? What is it that they could have in common with me? You know, instead, we're just made to be like, that side is the enemy. Right. You know, they don't believe how you do, so they must suck.
And they're the enemy. They're the enemy. They're the reason things are the way they are. It's not just the institute of the state itself, and particularly the institute of the American state and the empire, the American empire that has been at war with the world since, you know, before the 60s. But since the 60s, it has been just a nonstop anti-communist, anti-terrorist. We will invade the entire world because we are exceptionally American. And it's this American exceptionalism that drives me absolutely up the wall, bonkers. And, you know, I thank God we have, you know, people like you, intrepid reporters, leakers. Thank God for WikiLeaks. I have a hat that says I'm with WikiLeaks, and I cherish that hat. And, you know, this is a scary time, but it's scary for reasons that are so different than what you would get if you turned on the news right now. I just don't understand how we can live in such an alternate universe when intelligent people capitulate to this insane binary narrative that even though people are aware that we've been doing what we've been doing. And yet, for some reason, there's this cognitive dissonance, and they're willing to put it on the back burner and not think about it because, well, we have Trump now. And so now we don't have to think critically about what the U.S. empire is doing because, well, Trump is a shithead, you know?
There's something really, there's a reason for that, honestly. And this is what it boils down, what corporate media now boils down to. It's weaponized journalism. It's weaponized text, weaponized words. Everything has been weaponized. We are using these as volleys against each other. We're using these narratives as reasons to divide ourselves. Like, the government only has to put out so much propaganda. It's not as if the state sits there and says, what can we infuse into the anarchist community to make sure it divides itself? It doesn't work like that. All they have to do is put out a divisive topic or, you know, present something in a certain manner. And it's not even necessarily disinformation. It's just the way that it's presented, the light that it's presented in. We will divide amongst ourselves. And in that way, what corporate media puts out at the behest of the government, essentially, is weaponized. It's no longer just words that you can pull out your morning paper and read it and be like, oh, that happened. It's no longer like that. It has become, this is, how do we understand this information? How do we process it? How do I view, you know, the other people who don't necessarily believe as I do? And the problem is that people aren't taking that time to do that. And we're losing rights as that happens. And instead of, like, just doing that classic adage, walk a mile in my shoes, or, you know, you're never going to understand how I feel unless, I mean, you just have to be able to empathize even slightly with somebody else and to see a common ground and to come together. Like, I think that we can all agree that bombing families and kids is not a good idea. Running protesters over, not a good idea. Using violence to get your point across, not a good idea. Protest.
Right, and we
standing
have
in a road, but standing in a road is not violence. It might be really inconvenient and annoying, but it's not violence. And as long as we're not using violence against each other, we still have that common ground, and we are still under that same thumb. And that's where we'll find this, and that's where we're going to be able to curtail it and take back the power and subvert the system. But unfortunately, right now, people are just too caught up in this, you know, let's duke it out with each other. Let's pick apart every possible conversation that we have, because you know what else? That's what mainstream media does.
Yeah.
I mean, it's frightening the parallels that people don't see themselves doing.
Absolutely. I agree with what you're saying. And I mean, I still continue to argue that we have a unique opportunity to find issues that the alt-left and the alt-right agree on and form a strong coalition, anti-war, anti-censorship, Those two issues, just those two. There's multiple others that I could think of, but Ralph Nader and Ron Paul have, and I've talked about this before. They have talked openly about a left-right coalition, but now instead of finding these issues, the alt-left and the alt-right are both fiercely anti-war and fiercely anti-censorship. Instead of finding a way to unite these people against the empire, now they're fighting about every possible nuance of every possible question, and
exactly.
Yeah, and I don't know what the answer is. I don't know how we're going to unite ourselves, but we have to find a way. We have to find a way to get people to unite on some of these core issues. Because I'm telling you, once you get the American people truly questioning the state of imperial war that's going on, it will be a trickle effect, and they won't be able to stop it. But we have to get a good 30 to 40% of people marching in the streets instead of the normal like 5%, or I don't know what the biggest protest ever is. And protest, I know, isn't the only way, but it also has to do with what people are talking about. Anti-war, that's the way to go. That you start with that and you work backwards from that.
If we don't get people to see this common ground when this empire sinks under the edge of the quicksand, which it is doing at a rapid rate, if we don't band together, then we're all going to go down too. I mean, this is a chance for us to band together and do better, but we're going to lose it if we don't.
Yeah, I agree. I'm worried. I'm worried about what would happen. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Statists say that, well, the world can never work in a state of anarchism. Well, yeah, you're going to make it that way, because by the time the state collapses, everyone's going to hate each other so much that it's just going to be unbridled violence. Right now,
and when it comes back, it's going to be worse.
Right, and that's how history has taught us, is that meet the new boss, same as the old boss, and God, it's scary. We've got like a minute or something left. Actually, that's our outro music. Claire, thank you so much for coming on. This was a clinic, and I really appreciate your perspective on all this stuff. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. Read up on Ministry of Truth, the Countering Disinformation Act. It'll blow your mind, I promise you. All right. Happy Thursday, everyone. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.